Good day there, guys, and welcome back to the Blowing Cartridges podcast, your fortnightly, most of the time, video game deep dive discussion show. I am one of your hosts, Zach Clark, and as per usual, joined by my lovely co-host, Brendan. Brendan, how are you going on this fine evening slash morning, given we're on just different sides of the globe?
Yes, well, this morning has reaffirmed my opposition to daylight saving, so I think it should be abolished. And ideally, you'd have one global time zone, so everyone in the entire world is on the same time. I don't know how. I don't think that would quite work for a number of logistical and just biological reasons. But it's good to dream. But I think particularly daylight savings in Australia should be abolished. I think we can. We should all form a political party called the Anti-Daylight Savings Party, and we'll go from there. So this is my current hobby horse, Zach.
No, that's fair enough. And I mean, yes, this is the time of year where I think we've got like four separate time zones in Australia, and that's very relevant because our guest today is from one of those time zones. Ben, welcome to the show from Qualbert.com. If I pronounced that correctly, apologies if I haven't.
That's all right. Thank you so much for having me. I'm from part of Australia that doesn't agree with daylight savings. So we've had to coordinate across three separate time zones. Just happy to be here and like so keen to talk about some games and address some of the really cool topics we're going to discuss in the episode.
No, thank you. And yeah, it's a good one for you to come on because this episode, we'll just talk about this, you know, it's the end of 2023 essentially for the time stamping this for anyone listening in, you know, the year 2052. You know, we just want to talk a bit about games media and it's sort of the landscape as it is today. Obviously you as running your own website is you know, you're going to have a lot of key insight, which is we're really keen to hear. Also particularly because I know recently you've also taken up sort of a second role with like the Indie XP, right, which is on the other side of the equation. But I think that'll also add some interesting value to, you know, looking at what games media is like and how it works within this, you know, global industry in totally. At this point in time, at least.
It's more than magazines now, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's a good place to start because I think magazines is, maybe I'm wrong, I'm keen to hear from you both. That's certainly where I first got my exposure to reading, you know, Australians talking about video games back in the day with, you know, Hyper was probably one of the first. Technically, it was probably K-Zone, but like that's a
I was going to say,
yes, K-Zone, don't forget.
They're still around too. I met them at PAX, like the people who were doing gaming coverage for K-Zone.
I remember at some point, I think the Junglist who was on Good Game at some point became like a K-Zone. Yeah, I think he became a K-Zone writer well after I was out of the target demographic of K-Zone.
But, wow.
I think you'd be surprised at like who shows up on that magazine still to this day. But yeah, some ways probably makes sense that kids are still like in the zone of like getting magazines from their parents who are probably like, how can I avoid them being on iPads and screens? Let's buy them this you know, $4 or $5 magazine.
Yes, you could say they are still in the K-Zone, Zach.
Yes. What about maybe we start with you, Ben. Was there any magazines from your childhood that sort of stood out, or otherwise, if it wasn't magazines, that was your intro to again Aussies talking about games?
I mean, very early on, obviously, it sounds like we're all familiar with K-Zone. I read a fair bit of Mania magazine, if you remember that as well. That was like a competitor to K-Zone. And I mean, the gaming content in that was quite light, but it got me quite interested in it. Like actually reading people's thoughts about video games. And I mean, video games weren't really covered in like mass media at the time at all. So, I mean, I'm picturing myself as like a 5 to 10 year old just trying to consume any sort of knowledge that I had access to about video games. And really, it was kind of those two before I started exploring the internet. And I would say kind of very early 2000s is when I discovered forums. And the big one for me when discussing video games was game FAQs. Game FAQs was absolutely massive. And I mean, it's not traditional media in that, yeah, they wouldn't put out their own articles. But the community discussion on there was among some of the best on the internet. Following that, I had a lot of exposure to gaming content through the big two of the era, which I would say were GameSpot and IGN. And obviously, they're still around. I think their place in games media has changed significantly since then. And I'm not quite as fond of them now, whereas for me back then, they really were a really good source of mostly unbiased gaming content. And I really liked the sense of community reviews that they had as well, because you could contribute your own written reviews. And that is my earliest memory of writing anything about video games was contributing to the community reviews on GameSpot. So good times there, and I never would have figured it would take me to where I am now. And then honorable mention, of course, to Good Game here in Australia,
yes.
Which I hope we discuss further because they have had a very big impact on me.
For sure. Brendan, it sounds like you might have some stuff to say about Good Game, so why don't we throw over to you for that and other stuff you want to chat about.
So I think for me, I was most familiar with magazines to begin with because most of my early gaming experiences came from my older brother, who is about, how much older? He's about 5 years older than me. So he had the 64, and that's why my first experiences gaming were with Ocarina of Time and early Age of Empires 2 and things like that.
Nice.
So he definitely had a few issues of, I can't remember what the Nintendo magazine in the late 90s in Australia was called precisely.
I've looked this up because I think this, because I couldn't remember either. I think there was N64 Gamer and then it became Nintendo Gamer after GameCube launched. And I think that's the one I first read because that then got like decommissioned and like, hey, sorry about this. Your subscription is getting moved over to Hyper, which we also own, which was probably a good thing because it got me out of my Nintendo bubble. But anyway, you keep going, Brendan.
Yeah. So then the first magazines I would have, Mum bought for me and I would start consuming was after I got my GameCube at launch, and it was Cube magazine, wasn't it, that I think was...
I vaguely remember that.
I think it was British, but had it a sort of an Australian, for about 10 or 20 issues, had an Australian branch that it was effectively just a reprint of the British version, but had some local Australian things added in and probably, I think, tweaked it for release dates and the like, so the information would be relevant. So that's I would have been about seven or eight at the time. So I was pretty young when I was getting into reading games media, and those magazines were quite, important in sort of getting a greater idea of what sort of games were out there outside of the handful I had myself. So I think that was quite important. But if we move on and start talking about websites and the like, I can't really remember the first I started, religiously looking at. So I think I was familiar with your IGNs and GameFAQs and the like. And I remember searching up. I think I used a GameFAQ for Star Fox Adventures back in the day. So, and back when you'd go on the website, you'd print out the guide and you'd like staple it together and you'd sort of sit in front of your TV with this printed out walkthrough you got off the internet to try to finish the game. I did that a few games. That was iconic, and you don't really, well, now that you have your phone, you don't need to do that. You just, if you are using a walkthrough and you haven't bought the shiny hardcover or softcover version, you just get your phone out and have a look. And then I think it was really, would have been about that 2007, 2008, 2009 period that I started. Zach and I've talked about this before, and for whatever reason, we're mentioning it a lot more in episodes recently, but Screw Attack was probably one of the first websites that, mainly for the video content, but they would do daily news and the like. And that's when I started, I guess, getting a bit more interested in the media, like the games media as a whole. And it's about that same similar time period, or maybe a year or two earlier, that I did start getting into Good Game, which we were hinting at the former ABC show that I think I didn't really know it existed until I think it was probably one night in like 2007 or 2008. I just had ABC on and I was
stumbled across it
and I was like, hang on, they're talking about video games. Like I didn't think they did that on mainstream free to air TV, because I think it has changed a lot now that you can have like, I don't know, whatever, you can have like the Today Show on or a number of different morning TV shows in Australia now, and it's not every single day or every single week, but you'll see, oh, they are randomly talking about like Untitled Goose Game, or they've just talked about Cult of the Lamb, and like they're doing segments on video games in Australia and the video game scene in Australia. And that did not happen at all when we were growing up.
No, there was nothing.
There was still that huge divide between mainstream media and video games as a medium and a hobby that it still very much had that viewpoint of, oh, that's what children play, that's what kids do. Even though you can look back at like Sony marketing and corporate data from the 90s, and like when they launched the PlayStation, they were like, no, our target market are like people in their 20s and early 30s. They weren't targeting a children's audience, even though of course they sold a ton of PlayStations and a ton of games to the children. But I think we've finally got to the point where that's no longer the common viewpoint and the common perception.
Yeah, for sure. I think Good Game's such like a pillar. It's one that I just, I guess, completely missed, because I think I'd already like transitioned on to like online media. I'm not going to go through my full history, but I do want to explore one interesting shift. I don't know if it's something you guys have thought about, but Brendan, as you point out, a lot of the magazines I read as kids were either reskins of UK magazines, or they were just like my news agency imported UK stuff, which seems to be pretty common. But then, yeah, when I shifted more to online and I was going on, you know, IGN game trailers was the big one for me. And probably, you know, I looked at GameSpot and stuff as well, Go Nintendo, etc. That's when I shifted from like, I'm primarily absorbing the words of like either Aussie or British people to now I'm almost exclusively getting like American media coverage, which I think is a really interesting dynamic that is probably very unique to Australians, particularly our sort of age range who did start in that print media sort of digest, which, you know, if you go to Americans, that they just always got American stuff, and, you know, British probably always got British stuff, and then maybe a bit more American as they got older. Yeah, is it any thoughts on that from either of you?
I think the challenge with that and where we were kind of consuming our content from comes through region locking. With the vast majority of Nintendo games being region locked. And I mean, if you're consuming information that's for an American audience, I mean, so much of the time, our games here in Australia, we wouldn't receive the same game until several months later. Like, I look at releases now, and the fact that we get simultaneous releases across the entire world for a lot of games, and like, yeah, we take it for granted now. Whereas, like, previously, I mean, the US would get some pretty big games and we're left over here and we can't even access them because it's PAL region. And occasionally it would go the other way. I remember I was so hyped for Xenoblade Chronicles. I remember consuming any sort of media I could get my hands on about Xenoblade, like seeing sort of limited posts and videos about it online, and like I think potentially it might have been in official Nintendo magazine as well, which I did read pretty regularly. Like I got that on a monthly basis, but like, yeah, they didn't get that until significantly after us. So like, that's kind of when like your region specific media becomes quite important. And now there is quite a strong Australian games media presence, so we can consume news that's specifically tailored for us. But it wasn't the case previously.
No. That's very true. And it's always was like very confusing as a kid going into like, you know, trying to get sources of information of like, when is this thing coming out from like EB Games? Because like I just didn't know where else to go. or like writing into a magazine being like, when's this coming out? And then, yeah, sometimes it's just like, oh, yeah, it never did. It just never came here.
Yep.
Or it came here 3 years later, or whatever it might
Super
be.
Super Mario RPG, for example. Yep.
Yeah.
Never got it.
Very topical. Sorry, Brendan, you were going to say something before I butted in.
I find it interesting now that when you listen to games media, particular podcasts and websites that will do retrospectives on like the 64 and the GameCube and older consoles, and to Ben's point, they'll talk about, oh, the launch lineup were these games, or like, oh, this like Wind Waker came out in this year, or like Melee came out in this month. And I'm just thinking, well, that didn't happen in Australia, but no. We had this entirely different experience with, and sure, it's at a micro level, so it's sort of like overall for the entire span of the console life, like, yes, we got all those major releases, but we experienced them in different ways, and that's really missed out when you, because due to the population size and where the people are, like, most of them, even today, with quite a strong Australian games media, I'd still say that most people do consume a lot of American games media. You can't really get away from it unless you sort of actively curate against it, and I wouldn't advise doing that because there's some great content, of course, coming out of America in the game space. But I think it's why Australian games media, particularly through websites and hobbyist websites, took off, because I think we wanted to tell our own stories and recount our own experience and really hone in on that, because I know that's why Zach and I were both involved in very amateur level games journalism for Australian websites in the early to mid 2010s. So I don't know about Zach, but that was very much one of my main. I was also involved in the community that was attached to that website. So there's a few different reasons why I got involved on that level, but that was really one of the motivators for me.
Yeah, I mean, probably similar. In some ways, it's also just you like games and you want to write about games or do something with games, and maybe it's not, it wasn't as grandiose in my ambitions there, or maybe it was just more selfish and like I want to do this because it's fun. But yeah, no, for sure, I think that Australian narrative, like, you know, who else is going to write about getting like Age of Empires 2 in like a Kellogg's Nutri-Grain box if it's not for us, you know?
One Age of Empires 1,
fond memories.
But yeah, no, that's, I think, a good sort of point to start transitioning to our, you know, between the three of us involvement in, you know, whether it's amateur or even pre-amateur, as we were alluding to. So Ben, you mentioned before Game Facts, I think, or was it Game Facts or Spot? You started doing sort of the reviews. Like, I'm sorry if I've forgotten which one.
Oh, you're fine. So like the very first time I dabbled with any sort of writing about video games was on GameSpot. And like you could create an account and you could write your own reviews and they would appear on like the game page, and it had like a leveling system. So the more you contributed, the more your level would go up. And I found that like quite enticing. And I think when I was really dedicated to that, I was probably about sort of 12 years old. And I mean, my writing at that point wasn't particularly good. But it was certainly legible. So I was really big into the DS at the time. So this was around sort of 2005, and like did my own sort of little reviews for a heap of DS games. And yeah, probably didn't have a whole lot of traction. But I enjoyed doing it, and that was like my very first taste of it. And then in late high school, I was kind of getting more into like trying to build up like a little bit of an online presence. I was getting heavily into social media, and I was one of the admins on a Facebook page called Nintendo 3DS Friend Codes, where people would exchange friend codes and kind of organize like playing Mario Kart 7 online together, or Animal Crossing, that sort of thing. And it was a really good community. And I loved that sense of community that I had. Like they were all based in the US, and here's me like an Australian just kind of tacked on. And from that point onwards, it got me more interested in like, okay, what else can I do online? So one of the websites that I followed quite regularly was Zelda Informa. I don't think they exist anymore. I'm pretty sure they've been incorporated into another website.
Might be like Zelda Universe or something like that. I saw that recently as well, the like I amalgamation. So. Yeah.
And then in addition to Zelda Informa, there was another website run by the same people, but for non-Zelda content. And it was called Gamenesia. So like amnesia, but
okay.
With a G. And like it to me, looking back on that, was like a sort of independently run video games journalism website. And I approached them and I was like, hey, I'm really interested in getting involved. I love the stuff that you do. And so I pitched an article to them, and they were interested in getting me on as like a junior columnist, I think was my title back then. yeah. And like, this was my first ever stint into actually writing for a website. So I wrote quite a few reviews for them. Some of these are still available online. I reviewed Bravely Default on the 3DS. I did a couple retrospectives on like Zelda-like games, so 3D.game Heroes on the PlayStation 3, if you know it.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, I was in university and I was actually running a university club. So it was a society of manga, anime, and gaming. And having a whole bunch of like community events kind of centered around the 3DS. And around the time of Smash for 3DS launching, I was like, why don't I just talk to someone at Nintendo? And so I don't know how I found their email address. I think it must have been a lot of hunting, like trying to track down who is the right person to talk to. But eventually I got to speak to someone to Nintendo and I was like, hey, here's my involvement. Can you send us something for like a Smash Bros. Comp? And they did. So they sent us a Mario amiibo and a copy of the game, and we held a Smash Bros. Comp, and it went really well. And from that point on, I was like, hey, like if I talk to the right people, I can actually make stuff happen. So I went back to that same person. I was like, hey, I've reviewed Bravely Default. Bravely Second is coming out soon. Can you send me a review copy? And they did.
Wow.
And it was actually the collector's edition, and that blew my mind, because like they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, no.
they were great doing that in that I know the period you mean, yep. And I think it's just the policy and the people that they were at Nintendo Australia at the time, yep. Because I got I still have it. I got a collect whatever limited edition collector's edition of Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE on the Wii
nice,
U
nice.
From Nintendo. Which yeah. I'd never actually did the review. I did an unboxing and we put that on the website, but I never finished the review.
At least it's some sort of content. Yeah, and like from that point onwards, I was in a little bit of a lull. Like I still had quite a decent social media presence. In fact, it had grown significantly because I had a Facebook page called Honest Video Game Box Art that was just like paying out games and like, yes. Making it very obvious, like I made one for Shadow of the Colossus and it was like 13 bosses and nothing else. And like it was sort of shit posting basically, but it was really fun. and yeah, like I wasn't really doing writing in particular. It was more so just like content creation for a few years in my spare time. I got really involved in Instagram, taking lots of pictures of games because there's a great community on there as well. But then mid-COVID, I found myself with a lot more time and I was at home trying to figure out what to do. And like, I've always been so passionate about games and I just thought like, why can't I just start up a website? Like what's stopping me? Like I see all these other game coverage websites. Like there's no reason that I can't and just start writing my own things about games. And so I signed up for a free WordPress blog and kind of hastily threw it together and wrote a few articles so that it would have content and just kept that rolling. So every week I was putting up some sort of new review. I would have sent out easily like a couple hundred emails to various sort of indie publishers, developers, PR companies, just trying to get on their mailing lists. And it just snowballed. So, like, since then, it's grown significantly. We get thousands of people on the website each week, which is amazing, considering it started from me just kind of doing own thing by myself. Now we have a team. There's 10 writers in total. We get to review so many of the biggest releases. A lot of them we get on launch, which I'm perfectly happy with. But working towards the point where we can have reviews like ready up when the game is live so that we can have that content for our community. And a lot of that is at the like under control of the publisher, basically. They've got to see that we're a reliable source of information. We're not going to leak things, which we absolutely wouldn't, because I don't want to get blacklisted. but it's been such a journey, and I love what I do. I love the community that's been built. I love meeting other people in games media like yourselves. Like, PAX was honestly just a blast. And seeing how passionate people are about their own sort of content creation, whether it's a podcast or a website, or you have a social media presence, or you stream games on Twitch. Like, everyone who loves video games and wants to do something with it, it's just so good to see. Now you can.
For sure. That, Brendan, I don't think we're going to go over our full history, because A, that was like our first episode of our show. If you do want to get the full breakdown of our transition through various websites. But there was a few things in there that I think are really interesting through your story that I think are worth unpacking. Because I want to talk a bit about the pros and the cons of being a games journo in Australia, effectively, or at least a games coverage person. Journo, if it's not a word you want to use, everyone's different on what they call themselves. Because that story you had around how you sort of got those inroads with a big publisher like Nintendo is really interesting, but also really, like, I think something that is a bit of a pro in some ways in Australia. And what I'm about to say isn't to like undermine anyone, but I think it hopefully demonstrates the point I'm trying to make. I think in Australia there is some benefit to like being, you know, you might not get more traffic than certain websites in America, but because in Australia you're one of the X amount of traffic websites, you do get some good access potentially if you do what you did and actually make the effort of reaching out to these big publishers, which not everyone thinks to do because they just assume, oh, I don't get the numbers IGN does. They, you know, why wouldn't Nintendo talk to me? But I do think it's not easier, but there is a benefit that of being Aussie. And, you know, an example I can give is like, so when I was writing for Rocket Chainsaw, which is also a, you know, similar to to your website.
I know Rocket Chainsaw.
Yeah. So when we were we went to I only went to one E3, and that was the Zelda Breath of the Wild year with them. Nice. You know, they were able to get, you know, spots at not just Nintendo but a bunch of other, you know, booths, which for E3, if you don't get bookings through the through your sort of PR people, it's like you're going to spend all your day in a line to play one game, which that year was probably Zelda if you're going to pick anything. But yeah, because that, you know, you get to work with the local representatives in Australia who get a flyover, and they have X amount of spots, they, you know, you can get those without having, again, the numbers that even some of the smaller American sites have, which was, I think, a real boon and allowed us to sort of compete in that space, which I think is... I wonder, it's probably not true of every country and every geography, but certainly in Australia and our own little bubble, us and New Zealand probably partnered together. I think that's a real, it's one of the perks.
Yeah, like I fully agree with that. I find that now that I've dealt with PR across the whole globe, as a whole, I find that Australian PR, whether it's from the publishers themselves, the devs, or even contracted companies, they are much more willing to communicate. Like, they're willing to get you more involved in things and give you opportunities to cover games. Whereas, like, in a lot of PR, let's say in the US or Europe, you've kind of got to, you really have to sort of prove yourself. And then a lot of the time you kind of get ghosted or you have to like repeatedly follow up to be like, hey, I really want to review this game. Please send us a code. And you might only get a response after 5 or 6 emails. And I don't want to hassle these people because I know they get bombarded, but like sometimes it's the only way to communicate. Whereas in Australia, like pretty much everyone I have dealt with has been wonderful.
For sure. Brendan, I'm curious, when you were on another castle, were you surprised when you started getting like review code like given to you and the other staff? Because I imagine there was an element of like, wow, like we get X amount of traffic and they're still giving us stuff.
well, that was like an aspect of it, because I don't know if I did mention it in that first episode when we talked about our backgrounds, because, well, that was nearly over 3 years ago. But at one point, my title at another castle was actually, I think I was technically the reviews and news editor, which effectively...
Sounds good.
It sounded great on paper. In practice, I probably, in hindsight as well, I did an awful job at that. But my job as the reviews editor was very much, because I got involved with that website when, as you know, Zach, they had a lot of issues, because it was a forum-based website, and the forum had a lot of issues when they tried to update the servers in the back end of the website, and it basically all fell apart. And
oh dear.
The original team behind the website sort of got a bit all disillusioned with the process, and they all fell away except one or two people, and we tried to revive things. So I was in charge with, oh yeah, like you need to rebuild like our like network to get all those review codes and to get press releases and to do all that again, because that also all sort of dissolved as well. So I was contacting mostly all the Australian arms of the major publishers and as you said, the contractor companies that are deal with those bigger publishers. And I'm not sure how much has changed, because this was about 2014, 2015. But at the time, I found them like fantastic to deal with. Only once, and that was towards the end of my period doing this in sort of 2016, 2017, was I ever asked to actually provide any sort of traffic or data metrics to one of these people when I'd ask for a review code or to be added to their list for reviewers. And it'd be like, oh, well, can you tell us the traffic? Like that only happened once. Otherwise, like, you generally get the email, you get the mass press releases and the mass emails to their mailing lists saying, oh, like, contact us if you want to review this game. And every time I did contact them and got review code, I would get a review code. And there were some publishers that would just mail you games. I think that was becoming less and less common because, well, everything was going through digital codes and the like. But
yep.
I think, and this was unsolicited, but I think the last game I ever received in the mail was Mighty No. 9. And I could not get anyone on the website to review it. I had this like review copy of Mighty No. 9 in a jewel case. So it wasn't even in like a full actual PlayStation 4 game disc. It was like, it was a proper review code that they must have been sent from the US, or like, sorry, not review code, review like copy, like in one of those old jewel cases. And it's like, does anyone want to play Mighty No. 9? Cricket. So I still have it. I still have this copy of Mighty No. 9.
That's hilarious.
It's funny. This isn't quite related, but somewhat related. But those jewel case games, so when I was working at JB Hi-Fi, they pretty much sent every store, PlayStation at least did, sent every store those, basically, for at least their games person to just take home and play so they could sell it. Cool. So, I mean, it's just interesting to know, like, you know, as a kid, I never imagined that was a thing. But I'm sure it still is today. I'm sure like EB Games managers and certain JB Hi-Fi staff and probably other, you know, retailers get probably not jewel cases anymore. It's probably digital codes in their surely, their email.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You don't realize how widespread that sort of level of distribution is, because it certainly feels, I mean, it is a privilege. I'm not going to downplay it, but it certainly felt more, as a kid looking in outside in, felt like it would be an unattainable privilege than perhaps it turned out to be. On the flip side, one of the things that I think is very interesting and maybe not something any of us have had to deal with in recent years, thanks to the way that technology is involved, but I think the challenges around going to events and accessing things may have been more challenging earlier in the piece. You know, again, I mentioned E3 before. You know, again, full disclosure, I paid all my own way to E3. We were not a website that made money, so we were all doing it out of the love. I can't speak for how the website's going today. They might not be in that position anymore. But it was just off your own back. But even if it wasn't off your own back, if you're running a business, like the cost of getting people over to America or to Germany for Gamescom or to Tokyo for TGS is not free, not cheap. And I think that's one of the things that Australia probably in the earlier days struggled with. I don't know if either of you have any thoughts about that, given that I think probably by the time we all got involved, there was a bit more of an abundance of local stuff. But, keen to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, events are something that I try to get involved in as much as possible. And up where I am in Queensland, in Brisbane, there's not really a whole lot in terms of gaming events. I mean, you do have your pop culture events, Supernova, Oz Comic Con, and the like. But certainly in Australia at the moment, it's concentrated down in Melbourne. Pretty much everything is Melbourne. And even for me, sometimes getting to Melbourne can be tricky, having to fund the flights and pay for your accommodation, get time off work. So I can't imagine doing that for a US trip. I mean, going to E3 would have been an experience, and it's something that I absolutely would have loved. And I guess E3 probably will never happen again, based on how it's been going.
Probably not.
or not in the way it used to be. No.
And I did get press access to the online E3, which was a joke. But, like, it's good to see that Australia is building up a bit more of, like, physical events for people interested in video games, even if it is centered around Melbourne. And, I mean, we had South by Southwest down in Sydney as well. And, like, that's not so much a gaming event, but they did have a fairly decent gaming presence there. But, yeah, it still is a challenge. Like, if I wanted to, I could sign up for press access to so many events going on across the world, the likelihood of me actually being able to attend them is incredibly low. So it is unfortunate, and it's certainly still a challenge, but probably not as big a challenge as it was even like 5 to 10 years ago now, because we have like just more of an active gaming community here in Australia.
Yeah. Yes,
and I'd say to your E3 point that I think it is less and less important to get to those events, that if you're running a website, like when even sort of towards the early to mid 2010s when I was doing Another Castle, that like we never even talked about going to E3. You wouldn't like, but it still was seen as one of those, like, I guess the holy grail of games coverage, to go and you'd see latest games and you'd get your hands on them. But those events don't really exist anymore with the dev at E3. That, sure, you still have Gamescom, but even Gamescom, which is huge, is not on the same scale as E3 was in its heyday. It's, I think, the landscape's completely changed. Well, most publishers and most major publishers and console platform holders will just do their own online digital events, and they'll do invite-only stuff. So, sure, we'll never really get to those because, well, they will generally be based in the US or Japan or wherever they may be. Though I do remember, like, sometimes those things can be in Australia as well. Like, there was that pre-Nintendo Switch event in early 2017 in Sydney, wasn't it, Zach? Did you go to that one?
There were two. There was one in Melbourne, which I only got to because I'd already finished with Rocket Chainsaw then, but funny because you talked about Facebook groups before. I was in the Nintendo Switch or Nintendo, yeah, it would have been Switch Australia Facebook group, and they just like they got a bunch of spots and they gave away like five of them just to random people, and I just got picked. Yeah, so that was very lucky. And then nice. I think RTX was on in Sydney maybe a few weeks later, and that had the Switch, and I got a media pass.
I totally forgot that was a thing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We just uploaded a PAX sort of retrospective episode, and it's funny because it's like PAX obviously just celebrated 10 years. I think Sydney has had like multiple attempts of various companies to run a PAX-like event, but they've all just kind of died out. Yep. And South by Southwest, as you said, is probably not quite gaming, so I think that'll live on, but it's not really... It's just a different experience, I think. I didn't go, but I mean, from what I observed, being a multi-day long event across all parts of Sydney.
Yeah, it's like a whole week.
Mm. Yeah, it isn't the same thing as, you know, a condensed weekend or whatever is like EB Expo or RTX, et cetera, used to be. But yeah, that was the other opportunity to play it, and the lines were fairly big, because I remember, but I remember going there, there was, again, a bunch of other podcasters, like I used to listen to Reset. They stopped doing their podcasts. I knew them both from JB Hi-Fi, and then met like the Hungry Gamers and stuff there, because they were all part of that podcast network. But anyway, yeah, that's the, but as you said, Brent, but even then, like, I mean, I follow Vooks a lot, right? And, you know, you hear I mean, again, speaking of stalwarts of Aussie,
of Australian games journalism,
they've you know, we've got the chip of our shoulder from when we were Aussie Nintendo, and we sort of felt rivalry because that's been dead for so many years. But like, you know, you hear that there are events run, you know, for the press in Australia at roughly similar times as America or whatever for the big games, but unfortunately, as you pointed out, usually in Melbourne, just because that's where Nintendo is. I'm sure similarly there's a bunch in Sydney, because there's a few publishers, like Microsoft is in Sydney, I think Bethesda, which I guess is also Microsoft, is in Sydney, etc. So yeah, there's stuff happening, but it's potentially a few days late. And I guess that's where it comes, and why it's so important, I guess, to build, people want to listen to your take and not just a fresh take, if that makes sense, because we might not always get the like hottest, freshest take, you know. Again, like if we look at Mario Brothers Wonder, you know, for a lot of us, our take was only a few weeks before the game came out. If you were posting a preview from something you did at PAX, compared to say Americans who got to play it at what was it called? Nintendo Live.
Nintendo Live.
But even that's something that's interesting, right? Like I hadn't realized, I don't know if you guys did, but there's like Nintendo Lives just happened or about to happen in like Hong Kong, Taipei, and Seoul. Like I didn't realize it was this like super white. Yeah, they're doing them all over the shop now. So
can
I reckon
we
it's
have
like,
one?
Well, I think we probably will. I think the question will be, do they do what they did in America and make it like coincide with PAX, or do they just say we're not going to PAX anymore and we're going to do Nintendo Live as our own thing? Yeah, we'll find out, I guess, in the future. But before I just, one other small thing, I just got to say, you know, you have to count your stars, because at least you've got in Brisbane the Tony Hawk Pro Skater concert experience.
Yes!
You got something.
I'm so keen. I got my ticket. Like that is going to be incredible. Like actually seeing Tony Hawk in person as well. And like, what a nostalgic throwback. Like I played a ton of Tony Hawk. Granted, it was the Nintendo 64 version, which didn't have a licensed soundtrack. but I mean, so good to see that Brisbane actually gets a gaming themed event. And I mean, this is going to bring people from other states to Brisbane simply to attend that, because of how like impactful a game Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is.
Yes, 100%. And probably, you know, the other thing is it's probably like a once in a lifetime thing. I can't imagine we're going to get annual Tony Hawk concerts. So it's like even more exciting for you to not have to worry about the travel and just, you know, I don't know what you do in Brisbane. Do you guys get trains or buses? I feel like every city's got their own.
I'll probably just bus it in.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, we were like Melbourne. We're all about trams. You know, it's every state's.
I love the trams in Melbourne. It was really good. It was very convenient. Yeah,
sure, and get a plaster a game on there or something from time to time when marketing feels inclined. I also want to quickly just talk about, because we mentioned just before Vooks, some of the like current and still standing Australia media, because there's a few. I mean, not to like pick our favourites, you know, because we love them all. But is there any that in particular that you guys sort of read a ton of or stand out, whether that's, as you mentioned, like, you know, streamers or actual like coverage websites in this day and age?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I call it Vooks. I don't know which one is right. but I've followed them. It would have to be over a decade now. Like, they have the best Nintendo coverage in Australia. I can't compete. but yeah, like their deals coverage as well has been incredibly useful over the years. I was subscribed to them for quite a while on Patreon too, just because I was like, well, I want to give back. Like, I've benefited so much from this website, and they were actually a significant motivation behind me doing my own thing, because like, I love the stuff that they produce. They're independent. The quality of the content is still excellent. Like, in the whole time that I've followed it, I haven't really seen anything that I significantly disliked, whereas there are other websites where that has not been the case. I won't name names. but yeah, like, I just wanted to be like them, basically, and do my own thing and have creative control to do what I wanted. But just to produce like genuine, great content, build up a community. And I think it went beyond Nintendo as well, which obviously Nintendo is my focus. But now that I'm branching more into the indies as well, I want it to be all games, all platforms.
Sure. What about you, Brenna? Is there any Aussie sites that you pay attention to? Are you all tuned out now that you're in the UK and you're just like, I don't need any of that riffraff?
I think for me, I get most of my gaming, I guess, information and news from podcasts these days. So, of course, there's the Australian podcasts I listen to, like, well, our good friends, Drew, House of Mario, Josh Nintendvania, and a few others aside from that. And, like, I think even before podcasts took off, I mainly used to engage with forums. So that's how I got involved with Aussie Nintendo and Another Castle. And yes, I got involved in the article writing stuff and side of things through Another Castle. But actually reading Australian websites, I think like Ben, Fuchs has always been a huge one, that their bargain roundups and just their reviews and the like, I've been following for, well, many, many years. I think probably from that late 2000s, early 2010s period. We've also had him on this podcast two times, Zach, but if I want a review for a JRPG or a Japanese game, I'll go to digitallydownloaded.net. Matt Sainsbury, who's Australian.
He loves his JRPGs, doesn't he?
he loves his JRPGs, and you know that you'll get quite a unique take and games from him.
He's got such a flair to his writing. It's so entertaining.
Oh, exactly. Like, I think out of all like video game written reviewers, he has there's something to his writing that even if you have no interest in the game whatsoever, you want to hear what he has to say about it because it will be entertaining to read.
Yeah.
And then for general Australian news, I think I actually don't go onto the website that much, but I guess I follow them, all their social media accounts. So Press Start Australia, generally. Yeah. They are quite good for a general, I guess, news coverage from an Australian perspective. So I think they are owned by Southern Cross Stereo these days, aren't they? So they are.
Yep.
Correct. Yeah, I think because Shannon was the founder and then he sold it to Southern Cross Stereo at some point, years ago probably now. But I think they've also, I mean, I go to them, but also similar to Vuk's, their bargain guides for when I need non-Nintendo bargains is very good, which is a big theme. You know, I've got to love a good bargain guide. It's helpful.
Well, since we're the sort of people that buy games on release, you need to have that bargain guide.
Yes, because
every dollar counts. It means you can buy more games.
100%. And we're not like America, where all our games cost $60 no matter where they shop. We actually have options with savings, which is nice.
We have price competition. Yes.
Yay, the economy working as intended. I think there's something interesting I want to quickly highlight, and this is, I'm not trying to say this is like an important stat, but it is just interesting to me because we are at the time of recording a couple of weeks away from the Game Awards by Mr. Keeley. And it's interesting to see which four Australian sites got like picked to be on the panel, which Press Start, Stiviva, if that's how I pronounce that. Apologies, Steve, if it's not.
Is it Stevia or Stiviva?
I always thought it was Stiviva in the sense that, like, his name is Steve and he survived, but you might be right. Maybe it's Stevivore. I don't know. Jury's out. Does he only eat Steve?
Like, Stevivore?
Cannibalism. funny. Then it's Games Hub, which is that? I can't remember where he's from. Is that Edmonton, I want to say, is the guy that founded that? And I know he was on another massive website before he split out and did his own thing, but I'm blanking on where he was. And then lastly, good old SkillUp has made the list as well. Probably, yes. I don't know if I want to be so bold as to say the most famous Aussie YouTuber in gaming, but he'd be up there, I would think, in the current.
There's a few there now, but I think he's up there.
He's definitely up. He's not alone. I'm not suggesting he's the only Aussie YouTuber of note, but certainly the one I observed the most. There's something about, like, the Australian, like, I don't know how to put it. We have, like, an interesting, like, cynical way of speaking, a lot of us. Not us. All three of us seem quite positive, but there's a lot of, like, that real cynical nice. Aussie. Yes, we're too nice, but they do a good, like, really, like, way of speaking of, like, oh, I know what I'm talking about, and, like, you should listen to me, and SkillUp's definitely a master of that, I reckon, even though I don't think he intends to make his opinion sound that authoritative, it just does. Like yes, so you are correct.
the Yahtzee style, Zach.
Yeah, Yahtzee, though he's, I guess, British, but he's been around. He's in California now, I think. And then, yeah, like, I also watch, I'm a big anime guy, and, I watch One Piece, and Grand Line Review, who's a Sydney, probably one of the biggest One Piece channels, but also happens to be a Sydney-based person, has the same tone and the same vibe of, like, here's why my opinion of One Piece is more important than most other people's. Not sure if that's his intent, but I'm like, yes, I need to listen to you. But just interesting to see that those, like, you know, again, I'm not saying Jeff is the decider of who's important and who's not, but it's just, I just find that fascinating out of, like, 120, you know, sites he picks globally, or outlets, they're not all websites, which ones get into the mix.
I feel like for events like that, which are so heavily promoted and sponsored, like, a lot of this is going to come down to, like, the ranking of the website, which, I mean, kind of determines, like, how authoritative they are. And, like, bigger websites who publish more content and have more people writing for them can rank better compared to a lot of the websites that I follow within Australia are people's passion projects. They do it in addition to their full-time work, completely on a volunteer basis. And, like, the content is absolutely brilliant. But it's, like, it would be near impossible to get picked up by something like the Game Awards, because it's just, yeah, like, you can't create that kind of volume of content with a small team. It just won't work.
100%. I mean, even as you mentioned, you've got 10 or so writers. Is that what you said before, I think? Yep. I mean, like, I think about a year like this year, 10 people in their spare time is not enough to have played enough games to even do, like, a vote like this, right? It's just impossible. I also will just quickly say, the other thing I'm probably not factoring in is, like, there are, like, Aussie people in Australia working on the bigger sites, like your IGNs and Kotaku's. I'm sure to an extent they are. Well, actually, Kotaku's not on the list, but IGN and GameSpot and a bunch of others are. They
Kotaku's
probably get
their... embarrassed themselves a bit over the last year. So.
Yeah, which is a bit of a shame in a sense for the Aussie component of it, because I feel like it's sort of it was separately run. They had to sort of work together a bit, but I do feel a bit bad that some of the people here get it kind of caught up in the decisions of a company in America that they largely don't care about, but they're forced to share the branding anyway. That's a story for another day. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, back to what I originally asked, I'm similar to you guys. My exposure is very much like, yeah, your Vooks, Press Starts. Not much else, you know, other than, as we said, our sort of homogenous podcast group.
You're not reading Qualbert.com.
Oh, yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Well, now.
Look, I told you on Twitter or something the other week, I bought Spin Rhythm after your review. So,
that's,
you know,
right. That makes me happy.
it's in my new rotation after meeting you and having a look through a few of the articles. I think that sort of gives us a good state. But probably my big blind spot is Twitch, just because I don't watch enough Twitch, too busy recording podcasts.
I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Do people have the time to watch people play games, let alone find the time to play the games, which I struggle to.
Exactly. I haven't picked up a game controller in, I think, about 2 or 3 months at the moment. So, aside from when I was in PAX and played some games there. So
we need to try fix that.
it's a difficult struggle. To your point, I also have never really been into Twitch. I think the last time I seriously watched anyone on Twitch was about a decade ago.
Mm.
Back during the great undergraduate uni days when you actually had time to waste.
Yes.
age myself, but I think the last time I actively watched Twitch was before it was Twitch, when it was Justin.tv.
Oh yeah, Justin TV. Yeah.
I gave up afterwards at some point. By actively watched, I mean there was a group they were called the Speed Gamers, and they did annual Mario and Zelda speed runs for charity, and that was kind of my thing before Games Done Quick became a thing. And I still watch Games Done Quick, but in terms of watching Aussies that stream every day or two, it's just above me. I finish work and I'm like, I do not have. I'm either playing a game or watching you, and sorry, playing a game's one out if I even have time to do that.
Yeah.
But it's not to say there aren't big ones. We just, I think Laser Beam's one I hear thrown around a lot as a massive Twitch streamer / YouTuber. I also follow a guy called Panda on Twitter, and he does great Twitter content. I think he's a World of Warcraft streamer, and he opens Pokemon cards, which is probably why I follow him. But again, a lot of my exposure is I follow people on Twitter. I don't read any or watch any of their content, but I get their Twitter content. That's okay.
Yeah. And social media as well. It is a form of games media. I have through Instagram for me, I've been heavily involved with that over several years, and I've met a brilliant community of Australian gamers. And a lot of them are quite successful, and they're influencers, I would say. But they still post about news about video games. They reach a wide audience. Their content is great. So for me, that's still technically part of games media.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are probably quite a few people who make their inroads. The same way as you said, you back in the day, we did it through community posts and reviews on the big sites. Now it's building up Instagram followers or TikTok followers or whatever, and then breaking through that way.
Yeah.
The time, it makes me feel old, and I'm not even that old.
We're old, Zach. These fangled TikToks or
without doxing you. You haven't even hit the big 3-0 yet, like me. So I don't want to hear you telling me about age yet. And I'm not dealing with that.
maybe next year.
But you forget, Zach, that I'm still in a university setting, and I see all these 18 and 19 year olds all around all the time, and that makes you feel old.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, to sort of summarize how we sort of look at the industry today, and I'm keen to correct me if you disagree, I feel like where we stand is we got quite a good number of really high quality passion project, whether that's YouTube websites or otherwise, a handful of Australian sort of outlets that are businesses, let's call them, again, Press Start, owned by, as we said, a large business, and a few other I think Good Game, we mentioned before, still has, unless it stopped recently, Spawn Point, which is was airing on ABC. I'm not sure if that's still going.
I'm pretty sure it is still going. And they do have an online presence as well.
Correct. Yeah. So I think there's still a few, of the broader media companies that have some investment in Australia, which is good to see. And then, of course, as we mentioned, there's still a handful of subsidiaries, or if even not subsidiaries, just people doing contract work out of Australia for your IGNs, GameSpots, etc. And that's sort of where I feel we are today as a games media, you know, industry. What I'm curious to get your speculative thoughts on, and particularly, you know, Ben, you know, if you're driving your own brand with Qualbert, you know, where do you sort of think it's going to head? Is this kind of going to be status quo for a long time? Or are you thinking about what do I do to try and make sure I'm ahead of the curve in the next sort of phase of where this all transitions?
Yeah, I think we've seen it already as like a changing landscape with the huge rise in like short form video content. So like your Reels, TikTok, like pretty much every platform incorporating some form of short form video. And that's very popular at the moment. It's not something that I've had a lot of exposure to, nor do I consume it. But it's what's the popular media with a lot of, I would say, yeah, it's younger people who are getting into games more and following more people who create this sort of content. And then there's people of our generation, sorry, we do sound old now, that are used to consuming content of kind of various mediums. So whether it's written content or it's video reviews or podcasts, like that content is still a pillar of games media. For me, the central pillar is writing. Like that will never die. It drives the internet. Google is centered around blogs. Like, even though you don't think it is a lot of the time, good blog content drives traffic. And like the vast majority of traffic on the internet goes through Google. So if you can create a good gaming blog, then you capitalize on that. Whereas things like YouTube is another search engine technically. So if you create good video content, then you're going to benefit from that. So I think even though we have this short form video content that's incredibly popular and it's boomed, that doesn't mean that kind of more traditional forms of game media will die off. However, we have really seen that physical games media is like it's getting to the point where it will become non-existent aside from your like fan-made zines. I'm not sure if you've seen Lock On magazine, but that's like a sort of newer community driven one that's in like it's quite high quality printing, and it's one that you have to like get shipped to you from overseas. I think though those sort of games media will continue to exist, but probably not like your monthly magazines, because like they want to generate revenue and it's just not going to anymore.
No, and I think on that point, if you actually do go into a news agent these days, like the magazine sections are so dwindling. Tiny.
Yeah.
It's dwindling. It's like if you compare it to 15, 20 years ago to now, even in airports and the like where people actually buy magazines, there's not really anything there anymore. Like there's your, like, I guess the ones that have always been there and will sort of probably always be, will never go away, but it's dwindling to your point.
Which is a little bit sad because, like, that's something that's influenced all of us here.
Yes, but then I guess it's influenced us, but then hasn't really influenced, I guess, gamers coming up now. So we're going to really have that generational change.
Mm. Yeah, and, you know, I can't say that we did our part to keep it alive, right? Like, I mean, to me, games magazines from Australia died with Hyper, which did a slow and quiet death, I think, probably just before COVID. And, but I had bought Hyper in years just because it's, you know, I found myself getting them and just never reading them or not reading them to the, you know, as a kid, it would be like, get it and read it back to front twice. And then it was like,
yep.
I've read all this news. I know it's slightly different perspective, but it wasn't enough to prioritize in my life, I guess. And it's not a shock it's come to where it is. But yeah, I agree. It's now about those like high quality Kickstarter or, you know, Patreon funded like deep dives into things, which I haven't seen. Maybe I'm just oblivious, like an Aussie try to do that yet. I see a lot of UK, American, others do it, but maybe that'll come in the next few years.
I do notice a lot of them come out of the UK.
Yeah.
Like they just seems they seem to be popular there. Like I've a handheld history is one that's recently been pretty popular, and I'm gonna get my hands on that one. But I am glad that there's still physical media being produced, even though it's not on like the rapid fire like monthly basis. Because sometimes it just hits different to have like a good book to refer back to, and I think those big compendiums are more suitable than like weekly games news.
Mm, sure, I 100% agree. Brendan, what about you? Do you have any thoughts about where this is all heading, or whether it's just gonna we've hit the end goal? It's not changing.
No, I think it'll continue to develop, and I think in different directions because, well, as we've sort of skirted around, and well, Ben's a good example of it. I think in some ways the Australian scene is stronger than it's sort of ever been in many ways because everything is decentralized and mostly digital, and it is really the viewpoint that it's never been easier to start a website, it's never been easier to start a YouTube channel or a podcast, Take Us, or if you go on TikTok or stream or whatever, like getting the equipment and the like is relatively easy. If you want to design, like, yes, designing a good website is an art, but like you can get a website up and running pretty quickly if you use templates and like pre-designed stuff, and you're not too worried about some of those things. So I think it's never been more accessible. So I think that's going to continue. But at the same time, sure, everyone can start a website or a YouTube channel, but that doesn't mean everyone is going to. So you still get quality there. Because you still have to put the effort in. While I say it's never been easier, that doesn't mean that like you can do it in a very like, I guess, half-assed, like half-hearted way. If you're going to do it, you have to go in and do it well. And
it's
I also agree with a huge
commitment too.
Mm.
Like,
oh, it is. It's why I'd like retrospectively, I'd say that like part of the reason Another Castle and then Heroes of Play sort of never really got off was because just we wanted to do all these things, but it's just the commitment and the time and the effort. Mm. It just never really culminated because I really enjoyed writing. I really enjoyed writing reviews and writing video game related things, but I just haven't really done anything in that direction for, I think the last review I wrote was about 2-3 years ago for a random site. So I've fallen off that. I enjoy doing it, but you have to put a lot of time and energy into it. And I do think that, and I definitely agree with you, Ben, that I think going forward, like websites and written reviews, they aren't going away. That yes, you have a lot more YouTube videos, you have more TikTok reviews and short form content, but like you just have to look at OpenCritic, look at Metacritic. Those are still hinged on websites and written reviews, and those are like fundamental to how for better or worse, those are fundamental to how part of the industry operates in terms of gauging critical reaction to games, and not just for companies and publishers and the like to see how well a game has been received, but for gamers to have a quick way of looking up a game on a Metacritic and seeing, well, do I buy this game? Do I play this game? Is it good? And yes, I know, Zach, we've talked about that topic before about how like objective and accurate like aggregate review scores actually are, and how I guess effective a 1 to 10 scale is. But the fact is, those are fundamental to the gaming medium to a large degree, and like I don't see that going away. I think there's for all its flaws that we've talked about ad nauseum, that's not going away. So I think for that reason, and I think it's also a good thing that you can't get rid of those websites, because there's an art to written reviews. It's something like when you read a review that is particularly well written and you see the interest and passion and like someone's actually unpacked a game in a like a relatively short form piece, it's enjoyable to read. And yes, video reviews can have the same impact, but I always find that reading a written review, you get more of a sense of the game than like video reviews are great to see the footage and some of the gameplay, but you lose something in my view.
Mm. You know, I tend to agree with both of you there. My only concern, and it's not, this isn't a change for where we are today or where we've been in a long time, is I do wonder how many like career opportunities there are in the space. Because I think there's some good things that have happened. Obviously, I think things like Patreon and Kickstarter, etc., these crowdfunding tools make it possible for more people to, you know, start their own businesses or make it a career. But I still think that's very hard. And obviously, one of the biggest challenges is just the ebbs and flows with advertising spend by every company that wants to put ads on the side of websites or in front of YouTube videos or whatever it is that you do. You know, I mean, I'm not going to ask Ben for you to talk about your stuff, but we mentioned on our 50th episode, if Blowing Cartridges was a business, we'd be running, you know, operating losses, not large ones, but for the last 3 years. And I don't think we're ever, it'll take many years to turn that into a game at this point, if ever. Probably not.
the reality is, if we were doing this as a business, well, we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Like, no, the correct. It's all about passion. But the only issue, but the challenge I see is that it does, there is that time aspect of like, if somebody's, you know, working at IGN and wherever they're based, I guess they're like LA or something these days, I think, and their entire day is honing their craft, that's probably the one thing that we don't have the luxury of, where, as you mentioned, if you're working a day job, sure, you might write a couple of reviews, you know, or even multiple reviews a month, but there is just a limit to the time you get to do it, which I don't think that's going to change potentially. But again, I do think we're better than there was probably like a lull where like you either work for a big website or you didn't. And thankfully, again, I think that's where Patreon and other stuff have now allowed people to start their own ventures and actually turn it into, if not a full-time job, a part-time job, or just something where they can dedicate the time without the stresses of just living under a capitalist society that we have to all abide to.
It's unfortunately the case. I mean, if I had the option, I would definitely dedicate more of my time and my effort and my money into Qualbert. But I mean, everything that I do is on a volunteer basis. Everything that everyone else does on the website is on a volunteer basis. We don't make money because I don't want to put ads on the website and make it look awful like a lot of other gaming websites where, like, I go to them and I just want to immediately close it because it's cluttered and terrible and it's so hard to read a review. So, like, yeah, it comes a time where it's like, yes, this is a passion project. What else can I do with it? Or what else can I do within video games in general? Because, like I'll discuss kind of my upcoming, well, the venture that I've started and joined to get more involved in games. But I see jobs for games writing come up, and at the rate that you're expected to pump out articles, it does not seem enjoyable.
No, and not for the remuneration you get, because I remember when I finished my master's degree in 2019, which was also in the UK, I saw pop up on my radar was a job advert for Eurogamer to be a reviews like writer, and like for like half a minute I sort of seriously thought about, oh, should I apply for this just like out of like fun, because like this has nothing to do with any of my like academic background or like anything at all, but it'd be fun to do. But I looked at the conditions and looked at the pay and I'm like, actually, this would actually be a terrible existence if you got this job and undertook it.
Yeah, no, for sure. This might be a good time to pivot to that new venture, because I think one of the other positives, I believe a positive, of the Aussie coverage space is our, I believe, healthy indie game space. Yeah, totally. So I'm keen to hear, a bit about your new venture, as well as how important is, you know, and how integral those indies are to, I guess, a thriving video game website based in Australia.
Yeah, I think indies are now my prime focus. For the longest of time, it's been Nintendo, and Nintendo is always going to be one of my true gaming loves. But Nintendo here in Australia, yeah, they sell games, but they certainly don't produce them. Whereas we have some absolutely incredible games made right here in Australia that we want to show off to the world, and we want people all over the world to play them. I mean, I am so damn proud to live in Brisbane and know the people who made Unpacking, because Unpacking was just a huge success. And they are the most wonderful people. And like that just brings me such a sense of pride seeing an Australian game do well, and see people enjoy it, not just within Australia. So that's what I'm getting more involved with now. And my website has been a considerable help with that, because it's allowed me to establish relationships with so many Australian game developers through reviewing their games and getting them out there. And coincidentally, it's what I'm doing in this new role. So it's with the Indie EXP, who are a indie video game marketing service. And I'm helping out with social media and community management for games. We need to be able to get them out there. There are so many great games made here in Australia. However, making a great game is only one part of the challenge. Another very big part of the challenge is getting people to find out about it. And I've been doing that with Qualbert for a while in a small capacity. And like, I want this to be my career moving forward, because I know that's where I belong and that's where my motivation lies. I don't know if you know much about me outside of games, but I'm a veterinarian. And yeah, I went to vet school and I worked in vet clinics for 5 years and realized, okay, I don't want to do this. I want to market games. Yeah, so like, it's been a huge career pivot for me. Went through slight existential crisis last year trying to figure out what I want to do, but this is what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly hit with a bang, because I obviously, the first time I wouldn't say met, but I saw you was this year at the PAX Indie Game Showcase, where you were sort of presenting, you know,
oh, that was amazing.
Five of our probably brightest coming up.
Incredible.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a great space to be in, because I mean, it's so good that you know, obviously you mentioned Unpacking, which was definitely one of my favorites the year it came out. But you know, I think it's that and things like Goose Game, Cult of the Lamb, etc. They're not just getting big buzz here in Australia. We are seeing them blow up globally, which is good. But there's always room for more to get up there and get more press,
because there's
so many quality titles. So very keen to see how that helps or how you contribute to that. Very keen to see your success for not just yourself, but for the entire industry.
Just Australian games in general. Like that's what I want. I want to see more Australian games and more Australian games do well.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing is, it'd be great to one day have like a bigger industry entity, you know, something that grows organically and grows up. As I've said before on another episode, I think League of Geeks are really trying to do that, to become, I think they tried to publicly list, and they're trying to become a bigger company within that space. Because I think if we could get that like sort of mid-tier to like even like, you know, start to push up on maybe not AAA but AA production house that has a few games, that'd be great. Because I think that was the biggest issue we had, was, you know, we were so reliant on other publishers and then they just cut all their production in Australia. We need something that's like Aussie owned and isn't subject to the whims of corporate overlords and in other countries.
And that's where indie games generally tend to do well, because like they're not subject to that unless they side with a very corporate publisher. But generally that's not the case for a lot of indies.
Yeah,
100%. No, they partner with people that are, like, it's more a collaborative relationship.
Similar values as well.
Yes.
Yeah, like your Devolvers or Humble Games, etc. I see a lot on our local produce.
They've done incredibly well.
For sure. And I think, you know, going back to the media side, I feel like the indie space here is kind of like the kindling to a fire. It's where particularly the bigger game enthusiasts like us three and others around the world who are looking for the gems that aren't going to automatically get plastered on the front page of every website. You know, as you mentioned, like, you know, Nintendo don't have to just have to sneeze and something will probably get a major headline on every website under the sun.
Pretty much.
But it's, yeah, if you want to dig deeper and find stuff that before it becomes, you know, a meme or a massively acclaimed game. Those indie spaces and that coverage from your PAXs or your South by Southwest, and hopefully we start to see, you know, some more opportunities for a bit of a roaming sort of set of indies going around to other states. I don't know how that'll happen, but it'd be great if it does. You know, again, maybe something like a Supernova needs to flesh out its gaming space, less people just selling merch imported from Japan or from America, and more actual content that's made here.
That'd be nice.
You know, we can only dream until then. Maybe something to pitch them when you're going around. Awesome. Well, that was really, really fun and good chat. I really enjoyed it. Anything else, Brendan, you wanted to chat about, or Ben, before we start to wrap things up?
Oh, look, I think I could just continue to talk about this topic for ages. We would be here all night, but some of us need to go to sleep and others need to enjoy our weekend.
Yes, I think we'll definitely have to get Ben on again to particularly talk more about the Australian indie scene, because I think that is something we've talked about supplementary to a lot of topics, but I don't think we've talked to Australian developers twice at a, in different contexts and different capacities, so it is something we need to continue to interrogate, Zach. But I would love
to be a part of that.
Yes, but I thanks, Ben. And I think this has just been a great episode to do, Zach, because it does go to the heart of and what we discussed in our 50th episode, that goes to the heart of why we do this. We do it because, we want to discuss games, and that's why there is an Australian scene about reporting on games, because, as we've said, it's the majority of people in the Australian scene don't do it for an income. They don't do it because it's their full-time job. They don't do it because it's something lucrative. Like, there are some people that are fortunate enough and have managed to get themselves in the position where they can do that, and that's fantastic, but the vast majority do it out of a passion, out of an interest, and that the hobbyist element of the hobby of the hobby of video games and the entertainment sector of video games is such a fundamental part of it that I've always found it very enjoyable to engage with and to read the content of those particular people that you enjoy reading their content or watching their content or however they deliver it. So I think that's, like Ben, I could talk about this until the cows come home, but we do not have that luxury of doing that today.
No, and you know, I don't want to make you edit too much. So, you know, at some point we got to cut it off. Awesome. Well, you know, thank you both. I think that was a really fun chat. You know, could be good light way to end on a positive note the year 2023, because this will be probably one of the last episodes we post this year, I reckon.
This will be a January 2024 release.
Oh, okay. Wow. Sorry. For the context, we've been doing a good job of building up a catalog before. Well, we take a bit of a holiday break from recording, but maybe not editing. It sounds Brendan, so I apologize for that. For when people listen to this, you know, Ben, we've said it a few times, but just as a good wrap up, where can you be found in your content?
I'm all over the place, pretty much every social media. So qualbert.com is my website. That's Qualbert. And if you put in Qualbert on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, even YouTube, I've got a YouTube channel, it'll all pop up, or even just Google Qualbert. Yeah, we'd love to get more people involved in the community. We've got a really passionate community of people, not just within Australia, but across the world. And I'm genuinely really proud of our content and what our writers produce. And one thing I just want to make known is that we don't give review scores. I think review scores are awful and incredibly harmful to video games. And with the culture of review bombing, probably shouldn't exist anymore, because I don't really contribute an awful lot. So, no scores. Our reviews are more so helping you decide whether or not a game is appropriate for your tastes.
I don't know if this is appropriate, but it just makes me think of that like Simpsons episode where they go to like the rich suburb and like Marge is like, ooh, like the numbers are written with letters, and like Homer's like, from now on everything is going to be in letters, and that's what's like, no numbers here, all letters.
No numbers. I love that. That's perfect.
That's all. I also want to ask, And I can only assume, Qualbert, is that like a pun on Qubit, or is it just...
It's not.
Okay.
A lot of people think it is, which, I mean, that would make perfect sense. But it was actually a character that I came up with when I was a kid, and then it became my gamer tag, and then the name just stuck, and also no one else online is called Qualbert, so it's very convenient.
That's helpful. Okay, yeah, I'm similar path of just like coming up with a fake character as a kid called like Eggerino and just sticking with it for years, so I can relate. Speaking of, that's Kindred where you can spirit. Find. Yeah, and I'm I'm sure Brendan, yours is very similar in terms of Tamazoid, but that's our personal handles. But if you want to find us at Low Carb Pod on the major social medias, still haven't delved into the 50 billion Twitter replacements yet. Just going to wait to see who wins that horse race. And then blowingcartridge@gmail.com. If you want to email us, no one has, because I guess email is a dead format, but you know, we're there if you need to. You know, don't have to use Twitter or Facebook if you don't feel like contributing to those. But that's it. So yeah, thank you both again for another fantastic episode. Hopefully, as we just said, a good way to kickstart 2024. But until then, we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.